Have you ever sent a work email after midnight?
Because I travel, so what is midnight to you may be daytime the other side.
Have you used your SkillsFuture credits yet?
Oh, but it doesn't mean that we haven't gone through upskilling.
Oh, that's a good point.
Do you believe that work-life balance is truly possible in Singapore?
Have you ever been stuck in a meeting that could have been an email? Oh, Moscow says yes. Oh, Mintan says no.
I
Or
call
he
prime.
calls the meetings.
He chairs meetings.
Yeah, he chairs the meetings.
Would you say yes to a job that you're not 100% qualified for and learn on the go?
Yes,
oh,
both of them say yes. Yeah,
very
that was
fast.
Very fast.
Like my current job.
Have you ever had to Google an acronym or a phrase during a work meeting?
No cap, slay.
Welcome to the Work It podcast with me, Tiffany, and Gerald. Well, it's not often that we get two guests with us on an episode, so we decided to roll out the red carpet. I mean, really, essentially just rolling ourselves out of our cozy studio and come to a different location because today there are four of us. Let's welcome Manpower Minister Tan Sze Ling and Minister of State for Education and Manpower Gan Xiao Huang. Welcome.
Hi.
Welcome.
Hello, Tiffany
Hello.
And Gerald.
Hi. Good
Hi.
To see you.
So our listeners usually are very interested in two kind of issues. One is on retrenchment. Another one is on how AI would, you know, take over our jobs. Let's talk about retrenchment fears first, okay? So there are a few announcements on support given to workers, predominantly within the ages of above 40. Now, I want to know, how did the government work out that this is the age group that needs help?
So during the Forward SG exercise, during many of our dialogues with the TACs and generally with the entire industry itself, we are at this phase where it's a rapid pace of change.
Mm.
So the change itself, last time we used to always say that, oh, change is a constant, change is a constant, but that doesn't hold true. Actually, change is not a constant. Change is accelerating, right? And it's important that we acknowledge that, we embrace that. And at the same time, you also see the pace of disruptions happening so often. So for us, I think it's key that we continue to keep our workforce on top, not just on top, if possible, ahead of all of these disruptions and change that could come our way. And one of the key things is finishing an education, regardless of whether you're ITE, grad, polytechnic, even the IHL, right, the university graduate, typically around about 10, 15 years post the graduation, you'll find that the skills, the expertise, the knowledge tends to taper off and obsolescence actually becomes a big issue. Hence, a lot of our programs start, I would say, even in the mid-30s onwards. Mm-hmm. And of course, at 40 and beyond, you start to really worry as to whether they continue to keep up, because you also have the pressures of a family, you take care of elderly parents, and then your kids are young, right? So you're stuck in that period. And hence, all of our in fact, a lot of our schemes come when they're in their 30s, usually 5 years post-graduation, and all the way at 40s and above, we start to give them a real second bite of a cherry, the top up. And ostensibly, by the time they reach their 50s, we want to then help them to think about how to prolong their runway, the longevity for them, should they want to continue to do so. So we always give the option to our fellow Singaporeans.
Mm.
And hence, the bulk of a lot of this really heavy lifting in terms of the programs come towards the second half of the 30s. We go full swing into the 40s. That's why we have the SSG, the mid-career skills level up program. We've got the mid-career pathways, and just to make sure that we give that second bite of a cherry to our fellow Singaporeans, whether they go back to university, they go back to polytechnic, for these top-up courses to keep them abreast. And maintaining them at the very high labor force participation rate all the way well into the 60s, and if they choose to, even into the 70s.
Yeah, if they choose to continue working. But I think anecdotally, a lot of my, you know, friends around this age in their 40s, they are the group most affected when it comes to retrenchment. Would the support be targeted at this group of people because they're more at risk if there is retrenchment within a company?
So if you look at the statistics, the all of our labour market report. Actually, our retrenchment rates compared to past trends and so on, particularly coming out of COVID, actually is not high to begin with. But when you read about the ones who are affected, they tend to give you very, very apprehensive type of, very concerning type of news. And when you read in the papers every day about the volatilities and geopolitical tensions and markets, and so then people start to get this point of sort of apprehension and concern, anxiety across, and it amplifies in a small little chamber like Singapore, right? But first and foremost, if you really look at the statistics, the retrenchment itself is low. And having said that, our job vacancy rate is still very, very high, right? We have got something like in the tens of thousands of job vacancies, and these are the ones that affect those that are being retrenched. So the key thing is getting them matched quickly. So, I mean, I'm not underplaying it. Yes, the concern is very real. We want to make sure that we reassure them. But let's look at the statistics in general. Now, what is happening today is that coming out of COVID, a lot of the tech companies, they actually overhired.
Yes, they did.
And if you recall what I said earlier on, two years back, I said that, hey, you know, the IT industry, the ICT, the tech industry is getting very frothy, you know. And some pullback is actually going to be healthy for the market. And we, therefore, took it upon ourselves to make sure that we train, we send them up for all these courses, generative AI, you know, we have got all these AFAs on widening access to talent, all those things that we've done. So we've actually been able to manage that gradient, you know, quite fortuitously and also quite well. Now, but what we are concerned about indeed is the fact that the next few quarters, because of all this perceived fears about tariffs, right, you know, wars, global chain, supply chain disruptions, and many of these tech companies now reorganizing, right? In the past, it was a lot of sales. Now it's moving them to do prompt engineering, cloud computing, doing data analytics. And so because of that restructuring and reorganizing of this, the industry itself, you're seeing that churn. And I can tell you, in any healthy economy, churn is actually quite good because it then causes the innovation and things to move up. But during that churn, obviously, retrenchment is going to happen.
Yeah.
So what we have now done is that in the middle of next month, about a month from now, our Skills Future Job Seeker Support Scheme is going to kick in. And that actually allows the involuntarily unemployed, that means those who have been retrenched, don't forget they have retrenchment benefits.
Yes.
So they can take a bit of time. They can then go through our, you know, career counseling, go through that whole process of reorganizing their resume, go for interviews, and find something that gives them a better, longer runway, a better fit for themselves, rather than you rush into the first job that comes into play, you know.
Yeah.
And hence, with that, we support you for up to 6 months, up to $6,000. It's not meant to be a replacement. It's meant to provide you some support. And it will sit on top of whatever scheme that you're on anyway. So we give our low to middle income workers a chance to sort out what they really want to do.
Actually, this 40 number is quite a good signal. As I, you know, the people that I speak with very often, they ask why is it a magic number of 40? Right? I think it's a very good signal for us to also evaluate what we want to do at the age of 40.
Right.
You know, ahead of the career that we have built up so far and what lies ahead. It's really almost like a midpoint check for us personally to really take stock and to see how might we want to scale up, how might we want to even maybe change, switch roles a little bit more so that we can be more effective for the remainder of our career. So 40, I think it's a really good, maybe a really good time for Singaporeans.
Like a stock check.
Yeah. I think that's...
Life begins at 40.
well, while 40 is, we think, that, you know, the age where, you know, more critical thinking is required in planning a person's career. Actually, we do provide support for people who are younger.
Yes.
SkillsFuture Credit, for example, starts at 25 years old. And also, MOM has recently announced for our lower wage workers, workfare skills support will start from 30 years or onwards, so that lower wage workers who want to go for longer form training, in order for them to have better career prospects, employability, they will get the support from the government too.
I like that you brought up SkillsFuture, because I want to talk a little bit more about that. So, you know, with Mosgan, we can discuss a little bit more. So, I mean, like, so some people see SkillsFuture as part of lifelong learning, right? So they will see it as like, let's pick up a fun skill. So some people will want to go and cook, learn how to cook Hokkien Mee. Some people want to be a sommelier, you know. What do you use your SkillsFuture credit for?
I use all my SkillsFuture credits already. I did a 6 months in ITE for refrigeration, aircon and plumbing.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I took a specialist diploma in Republic Poly as well, right, for career counselling. Yeah.
Right.
So I did that.
Good. And also honestly, finished. Yeah, so he's finished all his, you know, but all his credits.
I still got the 4,000.
That's right.
I still have the 4,000, yes. Right. And yeah, so I'm planning ahead, like, what to do with that 4,000.
Yeah. Right. Whereas for me, I mean, like, if you ask me right now, okay, what do I want to use my SkillsFuture credits for? Honestly, I think I'll probably go and pick up DJing, you know, those electronic turntable kind. Because I think for me, I feel that if I want to upskill, like what Mosgan was saying earlier on, if I want to upskill, I can kind of do it within, you know, the company. I can ask my company for various opportunities to go and upskill. Whereas I think some people might not have that opportunity too, right? So I think one question that they would have is, how realistic is it to ask your companies to send you on to for these, you know, these causes, while at the same time knowing that they have manpower constraint?
Well, I think from the company perspective, we have to ask, why would the company want to invest in upskilling its workers, right? We know from MTI's data that companies that are more deliberate in planning upskilling of their workers for certain job roles do see better productivity, better staff retention, and ability to attract good talent. So there are some tangible benefits that are measurable. But we do know that companies sometimes can have constraints. They're already short of manpower. Yeah. How do they make time to send their employees for training? I mean, to be honest, there's never a good time for training, whether for the employee or for the company. But it is something that we hope people will see as necessary for the long-term good, business resilience, competitiveness, talent retention, and attraction. So it's supposed to be something that's win-win, both for the employee as well as the company. Only then, I think, the upskilling supported by the company will be sustainable and meaningful.
Yeah, but if I'm the employee, how should I have this conversation with my employer?
Well, first of all, I think as an employee, we can also take charge of our own upskilling plans. If I'm in charge of a certain project, or if I have intention to try new job roles in the future that would benefit the company, I can start a conversation with my supervisor and get the supervisor's support to go ahead. I think it's more purposeful when the training that an employee goes for is supported and recognized by the company. I think that's the best source of motivation.
I mean, maybe I can speak also for another group of people as well, where I'm actually at. So I'm a parent with young children, and I I'm at this age where this is a very critical period of my life where I cannot drop any balls. So I am, you know, I want to be a present mom to my young children, but at the same time, you know, I want to get as many skills as possible, like upskill it as quick as possible, in case the company, not this company, but in case it, you know, they decide that, okay, there will be some cost cutting measures, right? So I think that's what a lot of parents would feel, that, you know, how do I juggle both? Because I honestly have no time. Like, by the time I get back home, I'm so tired, but I'm a mom. Like, when I get back home, I'm a mom. I mean, Mosgan, you yourself, you have three daughters. I mean, I'm pretty sure you would have been in my position as well, where you would have to do this juggle, and it's on a daily basis, maybe sometimes on an hourly basis. So how can, you know, somebody like myself find time to go and upscale, to go and do all of these things when I have a full-time job back home?
Firstly, it must be something you're passionate about and you love to do, right? When you find something you love to do, you will make time for it, right? So that, I think that that's the most important point. And I think secondly, it's better if there can be some alignment of goals with your employer. Yeah. Hopefully, the type of training or upskilling that you are thinking of complements the skills that the company requires of you, either now or in the future, then the company, I think, will be able to make time for you to go for your training. In my previous job, the upskilling that I went through, a lot of it was supported by the organization.
Okay, you know, so you asked for it and then they gave it to you.
That's right, that's right. So for professional development and also for me to be you know, better in what I do, and also for the future roles that, you know, the company had expected me to do. I think it's a win-win that way.
But how do you do it, though? I mean, I'm sure you will be very tired by the time you get back home. I mean, honestly, I'm really very curious because I don't know how to manage this. I love my job. I really do. And sometimes I wish I can do a bit more of my work. But at the same time, I also do wish I'm there a bit more for my kids. I mean, you know, I mean, meantime, you as well, right? You would have gone through what I've gone through, too.
Yeah, I think it's first and foremost, it's interesting that you talked about cannot drop any balls, right? And that is really very Singaporean, right? I think we, in a way, we are sort of psyched, you know, into this thinking that, you know, we must be able to juggle it and you know, put up a brave front. But it's okay to not be okay.
Okay, what do you mean? Like, as in,
you
it's
can,
okay to drop
you
something?
You can drop some balls. Don't make it too hard on yourself, because at the end, at the core of what it is about your own person. I mean, you only go through this life but once, right? It's a journey in for you to experience hardships, for you to experience the simple joys in life, for you to appreciate the loved of your loved ones, the some of the vicissitudes in terms of, I know it's easy to say when you look at it backward, but we're in it, it's really very tough. But that too will pass. I think that's the first thing. Don't make it so, you know, difficult for yourself that, oh, I cannot drop any balls. Now, it actually, I spent a bit of time emphasizing that, because, I mean, I myself failed a couple of times, you know, and it's a matter
what?
Of in my ventures.
Oh, right, okay.
I've got a re in final year in medical school. You know, it took me another 6 months studying one subject. I had a re in OBGYN. So I think that it's actually each failure that actually makes you a stronger person. And I think that, of course, I'm not saying that everybody go, oh, please go out there and try and fail everything. Mm. No. But, I mean, you try your best. I think that's the most important thing. And if things don't come out the way that it happened, don't be too hard on yourself. Pick yourself up and move on. Now, how do you balance this? From the person's perspective, I think you need to first and foremost prioritize what is your need. Of course, when your kids are very young, right, in the early formative years, at adolescent, you want to also maximize the time that you spend with them so that you inculcate in them the right values. You can do it after they sleep, after they're you know, they've gone to bed, and so you can, you know, get up and study. And of course, during the time that you're working, hopefully you have a good and understanding boss, you know. Try to work with them. That's why we put up the tripartite guidelines on flexible work arrangement requests. And depending on the type of business that you're in, right, you could work with them in terms of whether it's flexi load, flexi time, you know, flexi sort of place. I think those are the things that you could work out with them. And from the business perspective, the government is rolling out a lot of initiatives and grants to support them. So the latest that I announced is the enterprise transformation workforce package, where we actually bring together a workforce development grant for companies to develop the workforce. On top of that, we have now rejigged the Skills Future Enterprise credit into a wallet so that companies can actually use that credit, that wallet, to pay for the training if the employee and the employer can come to an agreement on what to train, right? And at the same time, I think the merits have to be a win-win partnership between the boss and the employee. Say, for instance, right, if you're in this line of disseminating information, you're in a creative media kind of thing, so you tell your boss that, hey, I want to use the time to go and learn wine tasting, then obviously
they're going to say no.
Yeah, right. So I think you already got the answer. So I think it's a matter of finding that right balance, a lot of give and take. For the bosses, actually, if you can couch it from his perspective, putting yourself in his shoes, and for him to put himself in your shoes, and he can understand where this is going to hit, I think that understanding will be a lot better. Mm. At the end of the day, it's about communication. It's about providing a safe space for you to be able to open yourselves to each other, to one another, about where your aspirations, your ambitions are, and what your boss's limitations, constraints are, and how to find that middle path.
Mm.
I think it can be done. And whatever it is, every step of the way, whether it's WSG, we work with companies to give them work with them on the CCPs, the career conversion yes. programs. We give them grants in terms of job redesign and MTI, the other hat that I wear, we're productivity solutions grant for them, right? And the enterprise development grant, all given to companies. You know, they are quite generous
mm.
in terms of helping the company to transform. I think that it would be hard put for the employer to... I mean, he may say, turn you down once, but very difficult after the second or the third time.
So you're saying, keep trying.
Keep trying. Don't give up.
Keep saying, like, oh, I want to do this, yeah, I want to do that.
And tell them why is it good for them.
Mm.
Because at some point in time, right, other companies are going to move ahead. And if they don't do it, you will move to another company in time.
Yeah,
and
you
will
true.
Lose the talent.
Yeah, yeah, that's true.
And we're actually quite hopeful because last year alone,
mm.
we saw about 500,000 individuals in Singapore going for upskilling courses and programs that were funded by mm. SSG, SkillsFuture Singapore. 500,000, that's like one in five of our workforce.
So out of these 500,000, how many people actually got an employment conversion, means that they got a job?
No, not everyone is for employment conversion.
Okay,
actually,
so
employment conversion is a much lower number.
Okay.
But I think there are people who believe that while they are on their job,
mm.
They can go for courses,
yes.
mm. You know, to improve themselves and to make themselves more employable for the longer term.
Mm.
So I can give you some results from the WSG's CCP, the Career Conversion Program.
Yeah.
9 in 10, after having gone through the conversion program, actually 9 in 10 remain in employment for more than 24 months.
Okay.
They may not be within the same company, but
yeah.
sometimes they move across
yes.
company, but within the same sector. Sometimes they move from less productive sectors into more productive sectors. So 9 in 10,
mm.
after going through the CCP, with WSG working with the companies, mm. actually stayed in employment for more than 24 months. That's more than 2 years. Huh?
Yeah, so but my follow-up question is
yeah.
whether or not they are getting the pay that they are looking
for. So that's what I'm saying. Six in 10 actually got a higher pay.
Ah, okay. Yeah. That's more than half.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that's right. So there are actually two types of upskilling. One is the place and train type, like CCP,
yeah.
you know, where there is already an employee relationship, but it takes some upskilling for the new employee, newly hired person, to suit the job needs. And for those, actually, we see good results,
mm.
right, in terms of employment outcomes. Not everyone can get into place and train,
yeah.
right? Because sometimes employers are not ready to hire in big numbers. Or they may not have the job vacancies to absorb all the people who want to go for upskilling. So actually the other basket of upskilling is what we call train and place. Train and place. People who train in advance, and that will make themselves more attractive to prospective employers.
For the place and train, you typically the candidates, the people, they possess more transferable skill sets and experiences. That's why the employers tend to be a bit more receptive to take them on first and train them on later. For the training place, they have to work a bit harder.
Yeah.
Right? They have to prove that they can complete the training and they have the aptitude, the skill set to make it. They have to convince the employer that they are worth the hire. Mm. Yeah. So conversion, I think it's a pretty, something that everybody wants, right? And they think that's something very easy to do. But I think on the ground, it's not so straightforward.
Actually, it's more important to look at the aptitude
mm.
and
mm.
the attitude of the potential hire. I have had the experience of hiring many engineers who don't know healthcare.
Yeah.
But yet, when I find that actually their aptitude, their commitment, their dedication to processes,
mm.
to the SOPs itself, actually makes for very good hospital operators, because mm. you need a meticulous
yeah.
sort of understanding of the process, right? One leads to another, to another, to another. Operational workflow, what are the bottlenecks? How do you use and apply Little's Law to addressing some of these bottlenecks? Because you move one bottleneck away, you actually create other bottlenecks down the line. So mm. the engineers actually know this. So I like hiring engineers for healthcare type of processes, you see. So, and it's something that it didn't come to me. There was no one telling me. But yeah. After a while, I tried. Actually, they're very good at this. Mm. And, you know, in the army, I have got army colonels and so on who come out, you know, when they cover logistics. And so when they handle my procurement, when they handle the centralization, going out for tenders and so on, they're very good and very meticulous at it. So, hence, the important thing is to identify the process, the mindsets, the attitudes and the aptitude. That's more important than the immediate training.
Mm-hmm. I think the skills can be acquired from a course, but yes. Some things can't be taught.
That's right. Have it and absolutely.
If, yes.
And if we can display that, then that could help with the conversion. Yeah.
Yes, yeah. And to add to what Min Tan has said, increasingly, some of the SkillsFuture courses are longer form and also come with career coaching, as well as job referrals, linking them up with prospective employers. The part about career coaching is quite key because it's not just about acquiring skills and certifications. It's also about whether the person has an aptitude, right, to learn and a growth mindset, which many employers are looking out for.
Yes, because there's a lot of people who would say, I want to be a data analyst or work in cybersecurity. And then when you ask them, you know, what are your experiences? Have you tried it before? No. Then why are you interested? Because the government says so. It says that this is a growth industry, so they want to join this. I think this is a really important part to analyze and evaluate. Like, is this really something that you could do well in? Rather than just go with something that's secure.
I think some of my friends also who have taken some of these SkillsFuture courses, they will say that the organizations are very legit. Perhaps maybe a few of them have come back and feedback to me that, but when I sign up for the course and then I go there, the trainer, not very legit, don't really have the chops to do it.
SSG is always curating, training partners, and we do take in feedback regularly from people, participants of each program. So, and that allows us to cull or curate the courses over time, courses as well as training providers, to make sure that there's good bang for the buck, right? People exactly. invest time, money time, to go through courses. Surely we want to make sure that the expectations are met and that there's good quality training outcomes.
So there is a process.
There is still a process.
To make sure that all these CD training providers don't get to last longer.
They're not really CD, but I guess it's like maybe not as qualified or not very engaging. You know, like you go there and they're like, okay, let's just go through everything.
That's true.
But I guess you can always feedback, right? You can always say that this trainer is not the best. Yep. I don't really get my bang for buck.
That's right. There are a few thousand training providers that SSG works with, and this list is being regularly reviewed based on feedback as well as the employment outcomes from the participants who attend the courses. I think it's also important that we work with the industry partners, the employers, to understand
what are their needs.
Yes, that's right. Understand what are their needs. And also for those who have sent their employees for certain upskilling courses, whether the employers do see positive change. And,
it's always a feedback courses. Loop,
that's
right?
Right.
With everyone that's involved.
Right. Not just from the trainees themselves, but also from the industry and employers.
Mm. Yeah. I think it's important, two things from two perspectives that you look at it. One, of course, like what Moss Gunn has said about the constant curation of those programs and the service providers. And I think we need the participants to give us that feedback, because then you close the loop in terms of triangulation. But the second point, actually, which is just as important, is also the course content, the material of what that participant is going through. And it takes, of course, all parties to come together to ensure that there's effective delivery of the material. But don't look at just the trainer or the provider in isolation. Also look at the material, look at the frameworks, look at the portals that it opens, look at the networks that it allows you to be able to build. And I think use those things accordingly.
Right. In fact, for certain courses, actually, we provide incentives for the training providers to support employment of their trainees, the participants. SkillsFuture career transition programs, typically 3 months to 9 months long. These are longer form courses, some part-time, some full-time. We do reward the training providers if at the end of the course or within 6 months after completion of the course, the trainees land a job. Yeah, so that the training providers have a real incentive to make sure the content is useful, relevant to the industry, and the job matching, job referral, networking opportunities are rich.
If I were to think about right at the beginning when Min Tan said about how fast everything is moving, the change is accelerating, right? I think we can either view this whole thing that we spoke about reskilling, keeping ourselves career healthy, right? We can look at it from a fearful perspective, like, you know, change is accelerating, I will lose out. Or we can also adopt that the state of hopefulness, that I can ride that change. I can do something for myself. There are all these resources and support that's there. I like what Min Tan said about, you know, it's okay to drop some balls, right? It's okay because you learn from yourself from failure. And then after using all these programs to get back.
Yeah.
I think when we look at it that way, then perhaps we won't feel that it's all gloom and doom.
And take things with such a short-term attitude
as well.
Less
intimidating.
Less intimidating. Yeah. Yeah. Thank you so much for coming on and sharing your thoughts on this. If you have a question for Jaron and I, do drop us a message. We are at cnapodcasts@mediacorp.com.sg, or you can follow us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or YouTube, where a video version of this is at. The team behind the Work It podcast is Crispina Robert, Joanne Chan, Junaini Johari, Sai Ye Win, video by Hanida Amin and Mark Jati. Sound mixing is by Carrie Lim.
I'm Gerald.
And I'm Tiffany. Have a super work week ahead.